So last week we had a good show. We talked about AI, all the ways to make money off of AI. The week before that, social commentary. We broke down all the stuff going on in the world. Today, we're doing Andrea's favorite thing. We've got a guest.
I love when we have guests.
Take some of the burden off you.
It's not that. I just, you know, I felt for a long time we had an opportunity to mix things up a bit and hear from some other folks other than ourselves.
My thing is, I only want guests when we have good guests.
Of course.
And today we have a bomb guest.
Of course.
Today, first of all, we're talking about negotiating while Black.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it with literally the woman who wrote the book on negotiating while Black, Damali Peterman.
Love it.
Damali is a friend, first of all. She's a mom. She's an accomplished lawyer. She's an HBCU grad. Damali is the truth. Like, I love Damali. Her book, by the way, like, she's going to brag on the book. I'm going to give her a chance to do that.
As she should. I'm about to purchase it.
It was a bestseller on a number of different lists. One thing that I loved, she got an award called the Non-Obvious Book Award for Most Useful.
Mm.
Like, that's an interesting award and very well deserving.
Mm.
The book is doing well. It's distributed in 75 countries. And there was an auction for her book. Like, you know, a lot of times folks are self-publishing books and, you know, begging for folks to want to publish the book. Like, folks were fighting for this book.
Competition.
So let's go ahead and bring in Damali. She's a graduate of Howard University, where she went to law school, and Spelman College.
HBCU
She's
love.
A double HBCU
yes.
woman. Ladies and gentlemen, Damali Peterman.
Hi, it's so great to be here with both of you. I'm trying not to catch that cold or whatever's going on over there on this side of the microphone.
Yeah,
we appreciate you being understanding.
We'll keep you safe. We'll put up a virtual mask on you.
There we go.
Okay.
It's okay. If my kids can't get me sick, I'm good. Yeah. I'm invincible.
There you go.
Yeah. So what's also interesting, I called Damali last minute today, like, hey, why don't you come on our show today? And Damali, and this was literally 2 hours ago, and Damali's like, cool. That's how we roll.
That's how we roll. I mean, it's funny. I've been back to back, and that was like my 1 hour to do something else. And I was like, that's why I had that hour. Clearly, I was waiting to talk to both of you. So it worked out perfectly. I like what you're saying about the non-obvious award for being most useful. There have been quite a few awards. Most recent, Forbes ranked my book as top 10 best negotiation books. It's actually number 5. So that's pretty cool, given that many books came out decades before my book. And in just a year, it's made this prestigious list. So,
so that's top 5. That's top 5 dead or alive. That's not like top 5 this year.
That's not top 5 for Black folks.
That's like up there with Biggie and Tupac and Jay-Z and Nas. I mean, that's like that type of top 5.
That's right. That's right.
That's great. That's great. So brag on the book a little bit more. Like, you're now about to release. Now I want you to brag, my girl. You're about to release the paperback version, which is a whole new release. Talk about it. What are some of the things that the book is like, places the book has gone and taken you? Come on, come through with it.
Yeah. I'll tell you that this book is taking me all over the place. I have to give a shout out to Penguin Random House, my publisher in North America, and also to Bonnier Books, my publisher in the UK. And that's where you get this amazing distribution in 75 countries, because I went to two auctions, not just one auction, two auctions, one in the US and then one in the UK. And what's great about the paperback release is that not all books make it to paperback, by the way. In fact, I would say most books don't make it to paperback.
Wow.
And what's wonderful about this opportunity is that Negotiating While Black is still available in hardcover, and it's available in paperback as well under the title Be Who You Are to Get What You Want. Now, people always say, oh, you changed the title. I'll tell you, my book was purchased under two titles. So many people globally know Be Who You Are to Get What You Want, because that's the title that was purchased in the UK. Mm. And then I really pushed for my original title, Negotiating While Black, for the North American Right, because that meant that was meaningful to me. And so I love sort of seeing how the book spreads. There are three different covers. The international cover, the hardcover, and the paperback cover. And I always know where someone got the book based on what cover they tag me in or post or talk about. But it's all the same book. Three covers, one book, one amazing lesson, which is at the end of the day, the only constant in every negotiation that you're going to be in is you. And so how do you sort of debunk this idea that you have to play by someone else's rules or imitate someone else who was successful to be successful, because you aren't that person, they aren't you, and what superpowers do you bring to the table? So for me, this book is for anyone who ever felt overlooked or their opinions ignored or underestimated. It's for everyone, and everyone's coming out. Everyone's telling me that they're reading it, so I'm very excited about that.
We love that.
Thank you for writing a book for me.
But it's for you, it's for a lot of us, because I think, I mean, I haven't read a stat on this, but I think most people would say they're not good at negotiating.
Yeah.
They would like to bone up on it. And like, there's a whole, like, you know, like I studied negotiation in business school. Harvard Law School has a whole program on negotiating. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if folks have, you know, gone into these places, but everybody needs these skills. I want to give some stats. We always start our shows with stats. Our listeners have come accustomed to us being statisticians at the beginning of the show.
Consistent, so, except when we're not.
All these stats are just about salary. Like, this is one of those things that is one of those key areas that if you're not good at negotiating, then this is going to impact your wealth building, because you're probably not going to negotiate your salary well enough. Mm-hmm. So here goes some stats. So first stat, 67% of professionals negotiated their salary, which means like a third of folks did not. So not everybody negotiates. And ironically, that stat wasn't for job seekers generally. That was specifically for procurement professionals. Like, the funny thing about procurement, like, your job is to buy stuff and negotiate stuff. And yet two-thirds of the time they are, and one-third of the time they're not. I would imagine if we looked at a stat for job seekers generally across the board, the stat is even lower. But even if you then break it down for women, break it down for Black folks, it's probably low as well.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, what's interesting is that the first thing that you said is that people often see themselves as negotiators. And I think that's really accurate. You know, Penguin didn't just want me to write a book that had my stories. They wanted it to be science and data backed. And so I had to also conduct a significant amount of research to support not just my feelings, my thoughts, and my experience as a lawyer, as a mediator, and an arbitrator. But I had to also say, this is what I'm seeing. This is what studies have shown. And what can we do to get better? You know, you mentioned Harvard and their program. I took the Harvard Business School's program. They had a negotiation mastery course. Mm. I believe the course was 8 weeks online. And you had to be a certain level negotiator to even be accepted into the program. Mm-hmm. And even in taking a program like that, I've taken several courses on negotiations. I've taught negotiations. I continue to teach negotiations, negotiation skills. And for me, what was missing in the literature and the courses that I had taken was just sort of this, to your point about stats and people failing to negotiate or not negotiate when they could have. It just felt like something that people weren't tying things together. And what I mean by that is that sort of seeing where they could bring in skills, even if they didn't see themselves as a negotiator, even if they had a job to negotiate, so to advocate for a sale or particular engagement or particular outcome, or even if they themselves need to negotiate for another person. So in those three categories, it's negotiating for oneself, negotiating on behalf of your company as your job, and then negotiating for someone else. Mm-hmm. There are a whole group of people who may not have felt adept at doing that. There are a whole group of people who didn't feel as though they had mastered those skills, even if they had taken other courses or read books. There are a whole group of people who sort of felt like, well, I never negotiate in my job or for anybody. So, like, what? Like, what? I mean, why are we talking about negotiation? And I'll tell you that I've met all of those groups of people. Maybe we've all been in those groups at different points in our lives, right? And so what's interesting about that is when you're talking about salary in particular, I've seen so many statistics on the amount of money that one loses over a lifetime of employment by failing to negotiate, right?
Yeah.
By accepting.
That'll get people listening and reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, it's like, you know, why the first question is, why aren't people doing it? Is it just, you know, lack of skill, lack of desire? Is it because people feel as if they may be seen as difficult if they negotiate? I often tell people, especially people who are negotiating their first jobs or, you know, just coming out of college or high school or law school or wherever they're sort of launching their career, this is your chance.
Yeah.
If you're in a conversation with a potential employer, you have leverage. They want you. They want you to like them. They want you to join them. They want to consider what you have to bring to the table. And so don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to sort of see what that salary range could be, because once you're there, you don't have the same leverage, right?
That's right.
You have to start working. I mean, do you agree with that perspective, guys?
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, we all have leverage in every negotiation, and your biggest leverage often is the chance to walk away. And I don't think people recognize that. Like, I don't got to be here.
Yeah.
Like, argue with yourself. Like, I'm in a negotiation right now. I'm on a board and we're negotiating with like one of the leaders of the organization. I got to be real specific. So, I mean, real vague. So
yes.
I don't cloudy this negotiation, mm-hmm. but you know, one of the things I had to tell my fellow board members, like, yeah, we could stick the screws to this person, but like, they could just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to go do another search? Like, that's a real consideration. Like, if someone goes so far as to make an offer, they want you. There's an opening. They got the money for it. And literally half the time, people don't even negotiate, even though employers expect you're going to negotiate. Another stat that I saw that's crazy, companies are out here publishing, like, they're lowballing what they're putting for salaries. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Like, companies are publishing anywhere from 50 to 75% of the pay and benefits that they're willing to give.
Because they're it's almost like credit card companies and rewards program. They are banking on people not negotiating,
yeah,
or not using those rewards points or whatever.
Yeah, and 50% of the time, folks are taking the first offer. You know what's crazy? I found this, and this, I don't mean to be sexist or racist or both. My daughter says, oh, that's gender racist. I don't want to be gender racist either.
Gen Z's different.
But when I'm hiring in some of the retail businesses I'm involved in, gyms, dry cleaners, if we make an offer to a white man, he is coming back with a counter 100% of the time, or 90%. With black women, it's often, you know, like, they'll accept it and then quit shortly thereafter because they weren't happy with something that they could have negotiated.
Yeah.
Or they'll attempt to quit and then I don't have to be negotiating on them staying.
But I'm sure there's something culturally that's driving why that is, right?
Oh, for sure. On both ends. Like, why does the white Joker think like he needs to negotiate everything and like he deserves?
Because he's always been in charge. He's always been in control.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And since we're
I'm speculating.
Since we're talking
we have
about,
the expert with this, but.
And since we're talking about race, there's certain cultures where negotiating is expected. I remember working the register at Roy Rogers back in the day, and my Indian brothers and sisters would
come in.
How about we get this but for a better deal, because I'm not getting meat on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bruh, I can pay $5 an hour.
I'm 17. Fine, you don't want this chicken, but I can't adjust the price.
So, Damali, there's some real world situations that we see on the stage right now that are like big time negotiations, right? We're seeing, you know, our president literally negotiating like with the United Nations right now, if you call that a negotiation.
Is he negotiating? So, Damali,
bullying?
I don't want to diminish your expertise and the very important things that are outlined in the book. But I do have a question, and it's not one of our scripted questions.
I love that.
So we'll figure out if this makes the air, as I often say. So in our notes, we have some comments that suggest that people aren't born good negotiators, and that may be true. But I'm wondering if there's a real difference between negotiating or strategically negotiating and just wearing people down. And I'm thinking of my own children.
Yeah, your kids.
I have one child, my oldest child, who does not negotiate. He's naturally compliant.
Okay.
He's in a first day on a job today, a job to supplement his income as a substitute teacher, which is hilarious. The story's already. But I have another child who I don't know if I would call it negotiating. She just wears you down until she gets what she wants. She's more of the bully negotiator. So I'm just wondering, is there a real difference between negotiating and wearing people down?
That's interesting. People often ask me, is there a difference between, last week someone asked me between, being a salesperson and a negotiator, being a therapist, being a negotiator, it sounds like you're saying that her approach to negotiation is one in which her tactic or her strategy is to be unrelenting. That's what I'm taking away from what you're saying.
I literally used to call her the relentless one.
Yeah, that's my baby.
And that's from birth. That's from the time she could speak.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there are different types of negotiators. Why would she change her approach if that approach works?
She got the outcome she wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that there are different types of negotiators. I mean, in fact, that's kind of the whole premise is that that's who she is, she's the relentless one, and she's negotiating and getting what she wants. I always wonder in what situation or under what circumstances does one relent, right? I'm assuming she's not that way all the time with every other counterpart. People who know you well know you the best, right? And so she might know that this is going to work with mom, so this is what I'm going to do because that's how it works. But I wonder if she negotiates that way in other, in other situations or with other negotiators. So it's an interesting question. Yeah. I think people often ask too, how do you distinguish negotiation from manipulation, right? Mm. Or coercion or, some of those terms where there's more of a negative connotation to it.
Yes.
With negotiation, what's interesting is just taking a step back before I talk about differences between coercion and manipulation, is that for negotiation, I think that negotiation is something that can occur with another person or persons, or even with yourself. Like if you woke up this morning and was trying to figure out whether you were going to go to the gym or not, or at lunchtime, if you're going to have an extra cupcake or a fourth coffee, those are all sort of internal conversations you're having, which could be considered to be negotiations that you're having. And so if you kind of think about that at its most basic element, we have so many opportunities to improve the way we negotiate and to kind of customize how we negotiate for particular situations. So when we're talking about, manipulation or coercion, I think that kind of goes to intent. What is your intent, right? You're talking about someone who, you said she likes to bully people in negotiations. She's unrelenting. What is her intent? Sometimes people have these wonderful superpowers, right? They're able to get people to do things that they want to get them to do in the negotiation. They're able to anticipate what the next moves will be. And they're just really good at their job. I mean, you think about someone who is a chess player in a negotiation, right? They can think about what the next five moves are going to be. So is that manipulation or coercion, being really good at how you see the board, right? The playing field. I can think of many different analogies that we could put into place.
Sure.
And so I feel like you have to use these superpowers for good, right? It's kind of like, I don't know, if you're like a comic book fan, like you got to use your powers for good, not evil.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's fair. This is such a rich conversation. We're going to have to go to break, but when we come back, we're going to hear more from our guest, author, attorney, wife, mom, Damali Peterman. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Ellen Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum Advisors. Momentum Advisors.
So we're back. We're having a conversation today with the amazing Damali Peterman, who is an amazing lawyer, and she specializes in negotiations. She's written a book called Negotiating While Black, and you know, her law firm career started at Weil Gotshal. She started her own firm. Some people call her the Olivia Pope of negotiations, which I love. But what's crazy about Damali that I know, because I know Damali, like I actually know Damali, like we hang out, like I've been to the, you know, we vacation, I won't say together, but we've met up on vacation. Damali's from DC, and Damali comes from a big family where, how many siblings do you have?
I'm the oldest of seven.
When you have seven siblings and a lot of brothers, you're doing a lot of negotiating at home.
It's so true. You have to negotiate for everything. Negotiate. And then I would also say mediate. I was in the middle of parents and siblings. So I was like a natural like intermediary, if you will.
So when you were doing M&A, mergers and acquisitions negotiations, did you have the leg up just off of how you were raised?
I did. Of course, I learned a lot. At Howard Law School, and also my master's degrees in international policy studies. And I focused on conflict resolution, and I was able to study in The Hague and Japan and Denmark and Mexico. So basically, you know, a lot of life experience, but nothing will prepare you better than arguing or negotiating with your siblings.
That's right. That's right.
We could have used Damali on our team call today.
Oh, yeah. We had a contentious fight.
No,
we
were not fighting.
A spirited debate.
We were expressing our views to make us all better.
That's right. That's right. But like scenarios where folks negotiate, right? There's everyday life. You're negotiating with your kids, with your spouse, many negotiations with your boss and your coworkers. You're negotiating with your neighbors that are, you know, have an RV parked in front of your house.
This feels really specific.
Hey, really?
Like, that was a very specific example.
Like, it doesn't bother me, but what if it bothers my spouse, for example? And then there's, like, wealth-building scenarios. We talked about salaries. You're buying a piece of real estate, whether it be your primary home, vacation home, or an investment property. There's business deals. You're buying a business. Like, I was just on a panel on ETA, entrepreneurship through acquisition. A lot of negotiations go on there. There's like taking out a loan. Like I'm negotiating with a bank right now just to refinance my regular mortgage. Like they just want to give you what, you know, the original deal was, but I want something a little better, right? So there's a lot of reasons why people need to negotiate. So let's get into now some strategies. Like there's the stuff that you're taught in school. Let's start there. And I'm going to give it to Damali. Just talk to us about kind of like traditional negotiation tactics, and then take us into some of the things that you are suggesting in your book that might be a little bit different.
Sure. So I think saying traditional negotiation tactics, what comes to mind for me is basically thinking of someone who's a great negotiator, thinking about what they've done. And oftentimes, you know, what comes to mind is that person, to your point, Andrea, is someone who may be bulldozing, right? Like trying to get his or her way. And not really being a good listener and only focusing on what they have to gain in the negotiation. So when I think oftentimes of sort of, you know, when you use the word traditional, there are many things that come to mind, but I see the image of someone who is just primarily focused on the outcome as opposed to other things that may be taken into consideration, like relationship among others.
Yes, Lord.
Say one of the things you asked me was what makes my book different. I like to start with building a foundation, right? Because if you know, you're getting a house or even if you're thinking about wealth building, like what is that foundation? What is the structure about to be built on or based upon? And you want to start there. So that takes me to the framework that I call the foundational five. Mm-hmm. And these are five things you need to know to negotiate.
Got it. I want to get into the foundational five, but I first got to ask you this question because it's been burning my mind. Like as we think about what we're seeing happen in front of us every day with our president, some people are like, oh, he's a master negotiator because he's getting a lot of what he wants. But then you talked about relationship. Like sometimes when you get what you want, it also is at a cost. Like what's your take on our president as a negotiator? If you had to like give him a Yelp review as a negotiator.
So not we're not asking you a political question, just really about as a negotiator.
Yeah, so I guess it depends on, and this kind of goes back to the foundational five, because I think that's sort of the framework by which I would give someone a review on their negotiation, right? Okay. And so one, you have to know what you want, know what you need, know how to actively listen, know how to communicate, and know when to close. And so if I'm rating anybody on how they're negotiating, one, I got to figure out what it is that they want. What do they need? Are they listening to see, you know, where they can adjust their strategy? So do they need to be unrelenting? Do they need to be, how do they need to adjust their strategy? Do they need to be more personable? Just, there are many ways you can think about it. And then how do they communicate? What's the best way to communicate those needs and wants? And then how do you know when you have what you need and when to walk away? So when you're asking me to give a review, you know, not without having all the information. And don't forget, I'm a lawyer, so I'm going to say it depends, right? That's, yeah. The best lawyerly answer ever is it depends.
Yep.
But just assuming that we know that whatever the outcome was or the intended outcome was, if those things are being acquired or the person is, if he's getting what he needs or wants in the scenario, does that make him a good negotiator? It depends. It depends on if you're just measuring whether the outcome is right for right now, if what the long-term benefit or disadvantage is or could be. I think there are just many things that go into that. I mean, the word relationship came up. In terms of relationships, sometimes you have to think about that. We aren't always meant to have long-term relationships, right? Sometimes we have temporal ones that may just be fleeting, like going, having, it could be just a transaction, right?
Yeah.
And so it just depends on what people want. I mean, it just depends on what we're analyzing and what we're thinking about, what the negotiation is. And yeah, that's what I'll say about that. I mean, if I had to give a Yelp review, I have to tell you, I don't think I've ever given a Yelp review. Mm. I don't think I've ever given one before.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not how you give a Yelp.
Does that still exist? Yelp reviews? It's still a thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's all kind of reviews. I feel like there's an explosion of people giving their opinion about everything. On Yelp and other platforms.
On podcasts. Too. That's what people do now. They set up podcasts.
That's a fact. So I'll give my Yelp review since nobody asked. Yeah, I just think our president has one way to do it, which is like to be very brash, to really be rooted in leverage. And I don't think there's any consideration for a relationship. Like I look at the way he dealt with Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. Like first he promised that he would end this Russia-Ukraine war with, you know, in January. And clearly the war is still going on. It's gotten worse. And you beat down the person you allegedly were trying to help. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of these examples. Like right now, the news is, I'm not even going to bother talking to the Democrats right now about the debt ceiling. Like I'm not going to waste my time on that. Like there's like one way to do it in his book, which is what's your point of leverage and how can you beat the other party down? So I would give a low number of stars. I would probably give like 3 stars. The reason it's not one is that, yeah, he's getting stuff done. But like, I think it's at a cost. Like I look at where we are on the global stage and I think, you know, we're taking some hits. That's my Yelp review.
You got to remember for me that I'm not just a negotiator and an educator. I'm also a mediator. Right.
Yeah.
A mediator, what determines from my profession is we are neutrals. And so it was interesting, like, to hear your Yelp review, because I can totally see how you can come to that conclusion. And that's the beauty of having someone in the middle. I'm like in the middle.
Yeah. So let's get back into your foundational five. You went through them so quickly. I want to make sure that folks are really getting the most out of this. So the first one.
Certainly. So you have to know what you want. Now, knowing what you want is very important. So how do you distinguish knowing what you want from what you need? What you want is the sort of what, right? Like, I want a raise. I want a new car. I want to switch jobs. Mm-hmm. I want a Yelp review.
Yeah.
why you need it, that's sort of the answer. That's sort of the quick, why are you asking for this? Why do you want a raise? Well, I want to go back to school. I want to pay for my kids' tuition. Why do you need a salary increase? You know, why do you need a raise? Why do you need new transportation? Why do you need whatever it is you're asking for? Yeah. Like what's sort of the impetus behind your ask? And I think that's important because, you know, this is going to be a reference to an old song, but you may not always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you'll get what you
need.
All right. You know, except everyone doesn't know that song.
We got to sing it though. Somebody's going to have to start singing.
I can't say I know the song though, but I...
You might not get what you want.
I'm going to look it up. I know a lot of old songs. Yes. A lot.
Come on. Go ahead and sing it, Devon. Go ahead and sing it, Devon.
Well, fine. I was a keynote speaker where the crowd was very diverse in terms of age. Mm-hmm. And so I made that reference. People got it. And then the sort of reference on the other side that I brought up that people also got was Ariana Grande has a song called Seven Rings. Do you know that song, Andrea?
Not by title, but I probably know it when I hear it.
I want it. I like it. I got it. Like, you know, so basically going after what you want, essentially takeaway. But everyone was like, oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah. And so you have to make sure you have these references that are that can apply to various situations, generations. I had to say 6'7" the other day. I just learned that, but I had to say that.
Six, seven.
I still don't know what that means, but I said it and they were like, yay.
It's kind of like something's okay. It's so-so. Oh,
it's mid.
Think 6'7" on a scale of 1 to 10.
Okay.
But no one's saying that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. I like that.
So
6'7".
Going back to these Fab Five of negotiating. So number one, knowing what you want, which is distinct from what you need. If I could say that differently, it's like, all right, maybe I want to make 200K, but I really need to make 175 to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. If we were just talking about a salary, would that be a good example?
Yeah, that's a great example. And not only that, so you're talking about salary, people oftentimes get stuck on numbers. Salary comp, it can be so much more creative than numbers.
Yes.
And always seeing missed opportunities for people when engaged in negotiations where they just get stuck on the number. And then if they get a no, they don't think outside the box. Well, why did you need that a certain number? Is it because you wanted to go back to school? Well, maybe there's a tuition reimbursement program at your company. Yeah. You ask that. Maybe
that's
they can find one, right? So there's so many different ways to think about. If you focus on what you need and have more of a needs-based negotiation, then you may leave with more, being more satisfied because you're meeting the needs and not just kind of getting stuck with the position on a want.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think about the client negotiations that we make as advisors and planners, and we're having those conversations. And oftentimes the client is stuck on a number. Well, I want to have $2 million by the time I'm 60 or whatever the age or the dollar amount is. And then when we start delving into the what and the why, then it's like, well, if we can get you to 1.8 at 58, like, is that not good enough? Like, can you still do all the things? Mm-hmm. Like, why is it 2 million and why it's 60? If you can, what are really your goals? If you can live comfortably, protect your family, pay for your children's college education, whatever the thing is that means success for them, then if we are able to show them that they can do all those things and still have some cushion left to, you know, plan for the unexpected, then they usually walk away and go, okay, yeah, I got it. I'm good.
So I'm going to tell y'all just a quick story that was a frustrating negotiation. So this is years ago, literally 12 or 13 years ago, I'm recruiting one of the very first would-be employees of Momentum Advisors. And he was a guy I worked with at Goldman. So like I knew that he had a high salary expectation. He also had an MBA from the same B school I went to. So I knew, you know, I know what we can command in the market. And so I went to him, I said, look, I'm just starting the company, but it's going to be big. And if you come on with me, you could be my partner. And like, I can't pay you what you would command in the market.
Right.
But what's the amount that you could live on?
Yes.
While we build this thing. And I'll do my best to try to meet that number.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with a number, which was, you know, let's say it was like 75K or something like that. And I said, so if I could get you 75K, then you'll take it. He said, yeah. So I scrounge, I scrape, I write him an offer letter. He would be a partner in the firm, 75K pay. He then comes back to me and he says this, I met with my lawyer. First of all, y'all be messing up deals, Damali. First of all, he's
he
like,
might have just been bluffing,
he's like,
though.
He's like, I met with my lawyer and he reminded me that I've got an MBA. I used to work at Goldman Sachs. I'm worth way more than this.
All things that you like, already know.
I knew that.
Right.
Like, and so he took another job where he's a regular W-2 employee. God bless him. But I'm saying, like, he had a chance to be a partner in something that's way bigger than that job that he took, right, because he didn't know what he really needed.
Yes.
He yep. was so focused on what he wanted.
Yep. I mean, I don't want to focus too much on myself, but even in coming here, you know, I had a similar
yeah.
approach, which was my autonomy is valuable. So I knew I may not have gotten to the number that I wanted, but yeah. my freedom
yeah,
and being able to build my practice the way I wanted to mm-hmm. was
that matters
worth a lot.
And so going back to the point of wants and needs, right? Some people walk into a negotiation like it's there's a pizza on the table. Mm-hmm. And I just want to get as many slices of that pizza as possible. And if I can get 60% and you get 40, then I won. But in a negotiation, you talked about this, Damali, a second ago, or you could expand the pie.
Mm-hmm.
It could be bigger. Maybe there's stuff that wasn't a topping on a piece of pizza that could also be valuable to you mm-hmm. if you really focus on what you want and what you need.
Or a side salad.
It might be a whole buffet, but you're just looking at
the pizza.
So your next part of the Fab Five is listening. Let's talk about that a little bit more.
Listening is so important, and note that it comes before speaking, right? And yeah. I get it, communication is input and output, but I feel like people often practice and prepare for what they're going to say, and they don't spend the same amount of time on listening,
yeah.
preparing to receive information. In fact, oftentimes people aren't listening for a variety of reasons. One, they might be thinking about what they're going to say next as soon as the speaker stops speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they may not like what they're hearing. And three, if we're being honest, maybe they don't like the person who's speaking, right? Because if you don't like that person, you don't care what they have to say and how reasonable it could be, you don't like that person. And so there are a variety of reasons why people would not listen to someone, and that people don't think about how sometimes if you're listening and truly listening and hearing what the person is saying, you may be getting some of what you need. Maybe it's not being put in the package that you want to be put in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important for people to practice active listening. There are many ways to do that. I go into some ways in my book, but I just think it's so important. And it seems so simple, guys, that people don't, they don't listen.
Have you heard this expression before? Maybe you came up with it. Maybe it's in the book and I don't know yet because I haven't yet read it, but I will be. I've heard it said that, oh, you are listening to respond and yeah. not listening to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're yeah. just listening because you're ready to have your point so you can make your counterpoint
yeah.
as yes. opposed to listening, actively listening, as you're saying, to really understand.
Yes, I've heard that many times, and it's so true. And sometimes people just want to kind of fast forward to what they have to say, or they want to pick apart points. But think about this. This has happened to all of us. Haven't you had a conversation with someone, and they start off talking about like A, and then you think you need clarifying information, so you're asking questions. Mm-hmm. And then you find out later that where they really want to go was not to be stuck on A or B or C, but to get to like W, but they need to warm up first.
Yeah.
And you've been asking them all these questions because you think you know what's relevant or important, but you don't. Mm-hmm. So I tell people to just listen, to listen quietly, to give some acknowledgement that you're listening with some nonverbal communication. And then after the person has finished speaking, there are many things you can do before you speak. Just count to three quickly in your head and then speak. Because then you give the person an opportunity to say something else if they want to. Another thing you can do is repeat back to the person what they said to you. So that ensures that you don't just jump into a question or into what you, you know, or how you want to respond. And there's a lot of psychology that goes into this that talks about, you know, what the brain does with executive function. And, you know, I can get super, super into neuroscience. But the point is that listening, if there's one takeaway from this conversation for anyone who wants to improve their negotiation skills, is listening, not just to what people say, but what they don't say, right? Yeah. What are they signaling? What are they indicating? Especially if you're in a negotiation when the numbers are going back and forth, what messaging is happening and how can that inform what you do next?
I love that. I love that. So we got to go to break. And when we come back, we'll keep going through these Fab Five of negotiations with our good friend, Damali Peterman. I'm Alan Boomer.
I'm Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star. So we're back. Damali's still in the building. Andre is still coughing.
I'm hanging on.
So before the break, we were talking about the foundational five elements as described in Damali Peterman's book, Negotiating While Black. We went through knowing what you want, knowing what you need, actively listening. And the next one is knowing how to communicate. Talk about that for a little bit.
It is so important to know how to communicate, but not just in general, just like speaking, but thinking about what does your audience need to hear. So thinking about the different ways in which people communicate, the ways they receive information, thinking about when to be more personable, when to be concise. We've all had that person where we go in and we want to tell them like a 10-minute, you know, review or talk about a report or what have you. And they're like, you got 1 minute. Right.
Yeah.
That there's a reason that elevator speeches exist, right? This sort of 30-second pitch. There's a reason that we have that concept because people don't have the time usually to get all the information. And frankly, people don't have the same attention spans, right? Yeah. That the people used to have, you know, prior to social media and sort of fast information. And so it's really important to think about how to communicate. And then that number five in the foundational five, when to close. Like how many times have any of us been in a negotiation and you're like, is it time to walk away? When do I walk away? There's so many different things that go into making that decision. Like you don't want to spend like five additional days negotiating for just $10 increase, right? In whatever it is you're trying to obtain. That's not worth it. Mm-hmm. And so just thinking about when to close, when to walk away. And I think something that should be considered and taken into consideration in general in all negotiations, I wouldn't say all, but in many negotiations, is the relationship aspect, right? Yeah. Like, do you really, really want to win and like defeat your child in a negotiation, right? They do.
3-year-old.
I'm like, yes, look at that.
Right.
Done it. And your kid's like, what? You know, do you want to be the victor against your spouse in every negotiation?
Lord.
Right. Do you want to really go toe to toe with your future employer that you're going to have to then work with after the negotiation? That's why, Alan, to your point about lawyers making things hard, that's why people get lawyers involved. Because guess what? The takeaway that you had was, lawyers mess things up. But you didn't think this person made a mistake. That person made a mistake. You're like, the lawyer did it. Blame lawyers. Get the lawyers involved. Blame the lawyers. Yeah. Let them handle it. Let them be the ones to sort of be the bad guys. We can take it. And then that way you save face. Because you can say, it was my lawyer, man. You know, sorry about that.
But
it gives you some cover. Cover.
So getting back into this communication thing for a second. One thing that I use in negotiations is I come in really nice and trying to build a rapport. Mm-hmm. And I just find that it works in general. Like I try to make sure that I'm not saying everyone's got to like me, but like I try to at least be kind. I try to be considerate. I want the person to know that it's not just about what I get out of this. I care about you a little bit, at least, you know? And that, that then is a part of my communication package.
Mm-hmm. And you have to build a rapport. It's so important. There's some psychology and some research behind this, but people are more likely to help you if there's something about you that they like, right? Mm-hmm. Not that they have to like you as a person. They may not know you well enough to like you, but there might be something they like about you, like your smile, the way that you communicate. Yeah, the way, you know, they're all, what did you say, Alan?
I said, oh, thanks. My smile. Thank you, Damon.
You know, you never know what it's going to be.
He's grinning right now. Just so you'll know, he's grinning right now, literally ear to ear.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Damon. So I want to get into the wild black part, because I think that's the thing that I found most interesting about your book. It's this idea that there's race. Like, people want to act like we're in this race neutral world where it doesn't matter, but like everybody walks in with some sort of prejudice. Like, what's the difference of negotiating while black or while a woman or while being in some, you know, something that you can't control that might be perceived as a disadvantage?
Right. And so what I think is really important first is for me to say, which I say in my book, like, I recognize that, you know, we're not, black isn't like a monolith. Like, I know that. Mm. I know that there isn't like one way to be anything. And so what I'm really trying to get at is that whatever it is that makes us us, there are things about that that we can't control. And there are things about implicit bias, the way others see us or the way that, you know, that people make these sort of snap judgments. We can't control that. And that can also play into negotiations. And so the way that I talk about it in the book, there are a few different ways. One, I talk about it from the perspective of how can you emulate someone else's approach or style as a negotiator if that person has nothing in common with you, right? Mm. I mean, the typical archetype for a negotiator for many of the books, you know, is typically an older white man. Now, what do we have in common, right? Like, how people, the way that this person is being perceived in the negotiation, there could be a completely different perception for me, right? Yeah. And if I'm trying to be a tough negotiator, I could be seen as being aggressive, right? Or angry, or, you know, we could talk about different ways that people are stereotyped and how those stereotypes show up, and also implicit biases show up in negotiations. And so it's kind of hard to try to match someone in the style where you're different, you're completely different. I also think that people often think about negotiators as traits, right? So, you know, being tough or being flexible or being kind or being nice. People don't often think about characteristics of someone's, you know, thinking about a person's ethnicity or race or gender, but they come up a lot, especially in research and studies about the way that different types of negotiators are perceived. I opened the book talking about a study from Yale that took place where they had scripts for different car buyers. And there were women, there were men, and by and large, and I talk about this more in the book, the study revealed that that black women negotiators were treated differently than other types of negotiators.
Wow.
And so that's interesting because there's data as recent as 1995 from that particular study, and there are other studies that show that people treat negotiators differently based on certain things about themselves that they cannot change.
In that study, they were all reading from the same script.
The same script. The same
different results. So if that's the case, how do you get past it? Like, the other person has their implicit bias. You can't wave a magic wand and be a white man. So how do you get past race?
You can be the best negotiator you can be. Mm. And there are many ways to get past it. One, stop trying to follow someone else's script. That script wasn't written for you. Mm. So that's the first thing I say. It's like, look, what is it about you that makes you unique? At the end of each chapter of my book, there is a negotiating in real life toolkit where there are gems from that chapter. And some of the things that I go into is trying to identify what your superpower is. What is it that makes you feel good? What do you know you do very well? Or what has someone told you you do very well, right? If you think about that for a moment, how can we apply that to a negotiation, right? It doesn't have to be something that translates directly. Like, you know, people can say, oh, patience. Yeah, that translates directly. But what if someone is like really good at following recipes? Like, I'm really good at baking. Like, you have to be so exact. Well, that's fantastic. What is it from that particular skill can you apply to negotiating? I have some people who tell me I don't negotiate in my job or I'm not a negotiator, but they advocate for someone else. Like part of what they do inherently for them, for their children or for a puppy or for something that they're passionate about is they are a staunch advocate. And so how can you then think about how to apply that to yourself in your next salary negotiation, for example? So there are so many different techniques and tips. Something that you said that I thought about when you were talking about different state of affairs in our country is that a chapter that I wrote about years ago when I wrote this book is very relevant right now. How to negotiate when you're negotiating to survive. What do you do if, you know, someone from ICE comes to pick you up, right? Like, what do you do if you feel like you have to negotiate with law enforcement? How do you feel empowered to do that? There's so many different life skills that negotiation brings, not just about doing it in the boardroom or in the classroom, but there's so many opportunities just in daily life to negotiate and to practice and improve negotiation skills.
Were there times in your career when you were doing corporate law or in any walk of life where being a Black woman became an issue in a negotiation?
I wouldn't say that it became an issue, but there were many times when I was the only woman or the only Black woman or the youngest person or the tallest person. I mean, there were many times where there was something about me that made me feel or appear to be different. Something that I remember very clearly was one particular negotiation early on when I was pregnant with my first child and they didn't take any breaks to eat. I was the only woman there. I was the only Black person there. And it was all men. And it was like, it seemed like a stalling or it was like a strategy, kind of like your unrelenting daughter, right? Like who's going to break first? Right. Who's going to say they need to eat? Well, we're not robots. Everyone needs to eat. People's stomachs were growling, but no one wanted to say, let's break for food. Let's get
this. Or bathroom break.
Yeah. Or bathroom. I was just like, what's happening?
And I so need to know what you did.
Well, it was interesting. I was like pretty early pregnant. I was like maybe around 13 weeks or so. And so, you know that time when no one can see that you're pregnant,
right?
But you feel pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I was like, oh my God, these guys aren't going to eat. So the next day when it was time to leave the hotel and go to when it was time to leave the hotel and go to the conference room where we're negotiating, when I ordered breakfast, I also ordered lunch to go. And when I got there, I asked the person who was, you know, greeting us, you know, someone who was an assistant, if she wouldn't mind just putting my food into the refrigerator, and that if she wouldn't mind if I sent her an email for it, would she be able to tell me where it was or to bring it? So the same thing happened that day where no one is, you know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, no one's thinking about eating or mentioning eating. And so I sent her a message to say, can you tell me where the food is and I'll come out and get it? Bless this woman. She put this food on a silver tray. She put a Coke and a glass of ice. She put silverware there and brought in the food to me as if it came from, you know, a very fancy restaurant.
Wow.
And everyone looked over and no one said anything. But then the next day, everyone bought their food. And then the host felt so bad that they had food going forward because it was a several multi-day negotiation. They had food going forward. They had snacks, like midday snacks and everything. And what was interesting about that was I didn't try to make a cultural shift. I didn't say anything. I didn't, you know, okay, no one wants to break for food. I need to eat. I have to think about this child that I'm growing and I have to eat. And so I didn't do anything to cause, you know, to create a change, but a change happened. Well, I didn't say anything to create a change, but a change happened because I was like, look, like something needs to change. And I guess I know I'm the only person who looks like me here. But I'm also human like everyone else is, and we need to eat food. Wow. We need sustenance.
Yeah. I have a story that's not even about negotiation, but like it's one that I don't think people really appreciate if they've never been in this situation before. I was in Kiawah Island, South Carolina. It's outside of Charleston. And I'm at this beautiful resort. And literally the entire staff of the hotel, so gracious, all black. I realized at some point during this conference, I'm the only black person in this resort at this conference that's not serving food. And it just made me upset. Like, why are so many black folks in so many situations where we're the only one? And if anybody knows me, they know that I don't want to be the only one. It's just how it is. And so if you're in one of these situations, like, it feels, you feel alone. Like, I felt, I won't say embarrassed, but I definitely felt like I'm probably also the only one that has noticed that I'm the only one not serving food.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, I know how you feel. And I mean, it's 2025 and we're still having firsts occur, even in the midst of a complete sort of 180, if you will, from initiatives that have been helpful in terms of some DEI efforts. And so you could still be the first or the only in spaces in 2025. And that's just so, I'm always like so shocked when that happens, because, you know, you look back and you say, wow, like look at all these people who were, you know, in this space or in this profession. And it's only until now that they're getting the recognition. In terms of the story about being in a space where you're the only person who's on one side, if you will, of the table, I've been in that situation before too. Many times. And it does feel very isolating. But what you do, well, at least what I did, and I'm sure you did too, because you're just that fun, happy person, is just connecting with people, talking to people. Even though that you may be on different sides, I'm always like, you know, well, we're the same. We're the same. We're doing the same thing. And that's how I try to connect with people everywhere I go, figuring out what that common ground is. And I will say, you know, I have also learned that, you know, all skin folk ain't kin folk. And so, you know, that's why I started by saying that black isn't a monolith. Like, I get it. Like, it's easy. It's a shortcut. But it's also something to be aware that everyone is different. And so for me, part of what I wanted to do with that title is, of course, I wanted a provocative title. That is my original title.
Yeah.
It's rare that an author has their original title, especially once the book is acquired. But I wanted first to have more, hear more of our stories, our voices. Not all stories are black stories, by the way. But I wanted it to be clear that the book was written for black people and is written for other people too. So I wanted people to look at it and to be curious about it. I wanted black people to see themselves in it. And if it resonated with them, then that's fantastic. I also wanted people to see themselves in the subtitle, Be Who You Are to Get What You Want. Because authenticity comes up a lot, right?
Yes.
People want to be who they are. They want to, you know, kind of get the bag, all these different things. But being authentic doesn't give you a license to be thoughtless, right? You still have to be thoughtful in your communication and your negotiations. And so I'm always like, how can you be who you are to get what you want? And then in the subtitle, it's for anyone who has ever been underestimated, right? How many times have we been underestimated, right? Yeah. That may not be about race. It could be because of your gender. It could be your age. It could be whatever box you check. So I tried to speak to many different types of experiences in my book, but also make it clear as well. Like, I'm talking about my experiences and I'm talking about experiences of people who may relate to my experiences as well.
Love that. So sadly, we're out of time. It really flew by. Before we go, Damali, give some shout outs to where you can be found, whether it be social media, where the paperback book can be found, the hard copy. Break it all down.
Certainly. So I'll start by saying that the book is everywhere you buy books. So online and airports and independent bookstores and big box retailers. It's everywhere. I also narrated the book. So Penguin asked me to narrate it. So if you're a person who loves to listen while you drive or exercise mm-hmm. or work or walk, you can hear more of me there. The book is also available on Kindle. And then there are a lot of resources that are available on my website, DamaliPeterman.com. And so I'm on the news weekly giving tips in conflict resolution, oftentimes for parents, for professionals, and there's a whole host of categories where we have some one-page tips or advice that you can find on the website. So I often tell people, check those out. And then, of course, all social media. I don't even know how there's time to do it, but I have a pretty amazing team who makes sure awesome. That we're firing on all cylinders. I think that's the saying. I'm not that great with sayings, but I think
you
that's
negotiated to get the outcome that you wanted.
That's right. And that she needed at
That's
the same
right.
time. So thank you so much, Damali. You got to agree to come back. I want us to do another show about getting that book deal done. Like there's
That'll
a bunch
fun.
Of aspiring authors out there who have books inside them, including people who host this exact podcast. So
That makes my day. I would love to.
Yes.
So keep listening out there in the world. Hopefully y'all enjoyed this conversation about negotiating while Black or negotiating while fill in the blank, because this was advice
yes.
that really is good for everybody. And we'll be back next week. And I always have to tell you, if you want to talk to us, Andrea and I, visit our website, momentum-advisors.com. If you are looking for a financial advisor, or if you just want to talk about your wealth picture and know a little bit more about your readiness for retirement or whatever else is in your plan, hit us up. I'm Alan Boomer.
I'm Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum. Momentum.